Cricket on the Brain 24/7, 365. Well, every Monday, Corbin Middlemass and ex-test opener Ed Cowan join forces on the ABC Cricket Podcast.
And I watch him bat and I think it's like Brian Lara on steroids.
Featuring the best analysis and biggest results.
We're not better off trying to blood someone else in a series like this.
And the stories that have your cricket thread popping off.
So if I'm buying the Renegades, why would I want to purchase that?
ABC Cricket Podcast, every Monday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Because there's no off-season in cricket.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Thomas has just been quite critical of the performance after the game. Does that show the standards that he expects, the standards you guys expect of each other, and maybe that there's more to come from the team?
Maybe, but maybe he doesn't know what it's like to play in those kind of conditions against Erling Haaland, Odegaard.
That was Jude Bellingham when asked why his manager, Thomas Tuchel, had not been exactly delighted with the performance from England. It was kind of odd to see the English star bristling, having just scored two goals to lead his nation to a World Cup semi-final. Are we looking at a player-coach feud or a storm in a teacup? There was plenty more to discuss in a 2-1 extra time victory for England that included a Norwegian stunner, another disallowed, an overturned English penalty, and a big controversy around the Three Lions' first goal. Oh, yeah. Almost forgot to mention that Lionel Messi and Argentina saw off Switzerland as they chase consecutive World Cup victories. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. Socceroos legend Mark Schwarzer called the action in Miami as England edged Norway in extra time. Mark Schwarzer, I want to understand the emotion and the atmosphere from England fans as they saw off the Viking Kings in a heck of a game.
Yeah, I mean, it probably wasn't the best of football, and a lot of that's down to the conditions. I mean, it's very, very hot and humid. It was about 65% humidity, 38 degrees. 5 o'clock kickoff is actually the earliest kickoff we've had here in Miami. Even though it was predominantly overcast for most of the day, it was super, super hot once again. And you know, for both these teams, yes, Norway in their previous game against Brazil played in some hot conditions, but nothing like they do in Miami. So I think it was very telling for both sides. I think that's why we saw, for large parts of it, a reasonably slower tempo, measured, pacing themselves, the players. And also as the game went on, we saw players going down with cramps, which I think definitely affected a lot of the players.
One player who didn't seem to be impacted by the conditions was Jude Bellingham. Scored twice in a pretty dizzying performance, 6 goals for the tournament. I think he's got 4 player of the match trophies. He's delivering when it matters most, a guy who came into this tournament under a large amount of scrutiny.
Yeah, he has. And I think, you know, as a neutral and someone, obviously, well, I say neutral, I was kind of happy that England got through. Obviously, lived in England for a long, long time. And cover the Premier League, and obviously the vast majority of players playing in the Premier League. So I feel that the criticism and the way in which Thomas Tuchel dealt with Jude Bellingham prior to the World Cup, I think has paid dividends. I think Jude Bellingham's a different player now. He's a different personality. He's someone that previously, and I hate this as an ex-player and as when I used to play, that teammates would throw their arms up in the air and try and make it obvious that someone's maybe made a mistake or haven't passed them the ball. And I think that's really, really selfish individual kind of behaviour. And I think that's something that at times Jude Bellingham is probably guilty of or had been in the past. Now it's completely out of his game. Now he's a player that you just think he's actually changed his game a little bit. I think he's more measured in his approach to the game. I think he's more conservative certainly more selective in his work that he does. And I'm not saying that he doesn't work hard, because he works incredibly hard. I just think he's more efficient now as well. And he's playing in that kind of number 10 role, which really, really suits him. He's a real threat. We saw it with Real Madrid when he played in that role regularly, that he's a huge, huge threat. And his game overall has improved. And he's stepped up at the World Cup for England. He's been outstanding. No surprise that he's won so many Man of the Match awards, because he has been one of their best players, if not their best player in this whole tournament so far. Today, there were two moments of, well, certainly the first one was a bit of moments of, certainly excellent, maybe not brilliance, but excellence.
Here's Gordon. That was well done. Into Jude Bellingham. Bellingham with the equaliser. Cometh the hour, cometh England's number 10 yet again.
Touch, making space, and then smash across the face of the goal to score, to make it 1-1. And of course, scored like a poacher's goal. But it's that intent to get in the box, make a difference, be a goal threat all the time. And that's what paid dividends in certainly scoring the second goal, which ultimately was a winner for England.
England's into a World Cup semi-final, but the manager, Thomas Tuchel, was far from satisfied. In a moment of euphoria, he was actually kind of scathing of his side's performance, giving his on-pitch interview to ITV.
We made life very, very difficult for ourselves today. The result is fantastic. We're in the last four. It's amazing, but not happy with the performance.
Bellingham didn't appreciate that either when it was sort of put to him. And he said it once on the pitch and he doubled down again in the mix zone. So, you know, he had time to cool off and reconsider his answer, and he delivered it with it was pointed, I would say.
You know, I think we've tried to create a positive environment. We should continue that going into the final four. I can't speak highly enough for the lads. You're not going to win every game popping the ball and making 1,000 passes. Sometimes you have to win dirty, and we've done that again tonight.
Is that division, or is it tempers flaring after an anxiety-filled clash in the heat? Am I reading too much in this? Is it a storm in the teacup? Is it actually rather significant as we head towards the semi-final?
Look, I think there's a combination of everything. Look, I think Thomas Tuchel, I think, was obviously emotional and also feeling the pressure, and was obviously there was a release in terms of they've qualified for the semi-final, which is a huge accomplishment. It was a tricky encounter against a difficult opponent. And on paper, yes, England should be beating Norway, and I think they should be beating them. I mean, I'm not saying getting carried away, but they should be beating them by a better margin, and they should be playing better football. And Jude Bellingham's also right. The conditions, playing in those conditions, are really, really tough. We've seen so many teams struggle. We've seen Argentina struggle in the conditions here in Miami. So the actual performance itself, I'm not surprised by. And I said it before the game that I felt leading up to the game, it was going to be a really tricky game for both teams because of the humidity, because of the heat. And I think for Tuchel, it's making sure the players are not getting too carried away with the result. It's a fantastic accomplishment getting to the semi-finals, but it's not enough for England. It's not enough for Thomas Tuchel. So he's challenging his players. He's putting them under pressure.
I'm impressed with the shift that they put in, the effort, team spirit, the belief and to overcome adversity and to dig in and find ways to win is on the absolutely highest level. They cannot get enough praise for that. But I'm also a football coach and I think we can play better.
He wants them to know that he's not happy with the performance. And what better way to do it is when you've won a game, right? You can still be very, very disappointed with certain performances. But he never questioned their attitude, never questioned their desire and their mentality. It was more about the performance itself. They let themselves down in terms of that. But I think there's a big kind of a mark against it because of the conditions. They do need to be better in the next round. And I think that was more his message. I think he was more sort of directing it towards it's not good enough for what we want to accomplish. And he knows there are far, far big challenges ahead. Argentina now has obviously been decided. They're going to play Argentina in the semi-final. And the winner of that will take on either France or Spain. And whoever that is, they're going to have to play a lot better than what they've played already. And certainly if England get through to the final and they beat Argentina, first and foremost, they have to beat Argentina. And the way they do it is by playing far better than what they did against Norway. Fortunately for them, they're going to play in Atlanta. And Atlanta's got a closed roof. It's air-conditioned. It is an ideal playing condition. So that is going to be certainly playing into favour for England in terms of hopefully playing some better football. And they know that, and Thomas Tuchel knows that they're going to have to be vastly improved to have any chance against either Spain or France if they get through past Argentina.
Another major talking point surrounded England's equalising goal from Bellingham. So the Norwegian keeper's goal kick hits the spider cam wire. It falls to the feet of Elliot Anderson, who plays Anthony Gordon forward, who picks apart the defence. Goal is scored. I mean, if Maradona gave us the hand of God, I don't know what this was. Maybe the camera of Christ, divine intervention, Mark. But by the letter of the law, it should have been a drop ball, not play on.
The ball actually is touched by the cable attached to the cable camera above the stadium. Drops down very quickly, you can see. It comes back very quickly to England. Two passes later, it goes to Jude Bellingham and in the back of the net. Now afterwards, Ståle Solbakken, the manager of Norway, not happy with the referee. Goalkeeper, of course, as well, he's pointing up and saying it touched the cable on that cable camera. The manager of Norway pointing as well.
FIFA is adamant that, according to its ball chip data, it did not strike the wire. The Norwegian manager was, you know, clear in what he believed to have seen.
I can't say anything about that because FIFA, if there's no been no sound or there has been no in the chip, what can I say against that? But the ball drops down straight from heaven, it says everyone, including Örjan, who is the goalie, including the guy who's going to receive the ball.
Is this a scandal or is this not so much of a big deal?
It's certainly a talking point. I mean, I called the game, like you said. We didn't notice it. I can tell you that, honestly, we did not notice anything other than Nyland complaining about the goal. We didn't understand why once a goal was scored. And also afterwards at halftime when the Norwegian manager went on the pitch to complain to the referee, we had absolutely no idea why he was. We didn't see it on our replays. We've got a small monitor, so, I mean, it's difficult to see it. And the referee didn't see it. A lot of the players, I don't think, saw it. So yeah, look, I mean, if FIFA say it didn't happen, what can I say? I mean, the game continued, England scored, still had a bit to do to be able to go up and score. But I can also, if it were the case that it did hit the wire, I feel for Norway in this instance.
Erling Haaland, he had a tricky day. He was stifled. I think he had the fewest touches of anyone on the pitch. His goalkeeper, Nyland, had doubled the amount of touches that Erling Haaland had. Ultimately, he was subbed before full time. Maybe the biggest contribution he had was the moments where Norway looked to have gone ahead in the second half off a corner, but the goal was pulled back as Erling Haaland was ruled to have manhandled Anderson.
Big moment in the game, this. Which way will
After
it go?
Review, number 9 of all Norway. Pushed deliberately the defender before
free
the
kick.
Ball was in play.
For the foul by
Final
Haaland
decision,
on Anderson.
Corner retaken.
Erling Haaland, we didn't quite see the sort of star that we've seen throughout the tournament today, did we?
No, it didn't. But I thought Harry Kane was similar in so many ways. Like, we're talking about two of the best strikers on the planet, and both of them were really not effective in the game. Erling Haaland probably less effective than Harry Kane. But we've seen that before with Erling Haaland, that, you know, if he doesn't get service, if he's not given opportunities, it's very difficult to get him involved in the game. He's one of those players that certainly is very selective in his runs, but then when he does, there's a turn of pace, there's a burst of pace, and there's athleticism, there's strength on the ball. We just didn't see that today. And partly, I think, also the way Norway played, the way they played more conservatively, conserved energy for large periods of time. And I think the reason he came off was he was injured. Whether it was a cramp or whether it was a calf issue or some sorts, he looked like he was really struggling at the beginning of extra time. I'm surprised he actually lasted the whole half of extra time. We saw him limping. We saw him struggling.
It was not a tough decision to take him out because he was finished. Maybe I should have taken him out 10 minutes before.
So that was obviously very disappointing to see because obviously he's a phenomenal player and you kind of thought this was an incredible battle between two of the best strikers on the planet right now and certainly for some time. And unfortunately, neither of them really stood out. But again, I'll go back to it. The conditions played a massive part in it.
Hey, geez, the video assistant referee doesn't seem to be having a particularly solid end to the tournament right now. I feel like my heart's in my mouth every time we're seeing something reviewed, and there was a penalty in extra time for England that was overturned. Do you think we have confidence that VAR's going to give us the correct outcome as we head towards the semifinals?
I think part of the issue is the inconsistency and not knowing what is the correct decision and what is, you know, and how referee is going to referee the instance. Look, I felt the disallowed goal going back to the Haaland foul on Elliot Anderson in the box, that being ruled out for a push. I think that's actually a fair decision. I think if it was flipped the other way, Norway would be outraged if that weren't overturned. And I agree. I think it was the right decision. I'm really, really surprised about the other decision. I'm just surprised that they overturned the Jed Spence penalty. I thought it was a definite penalty.
Ref's going to have a look. That might not be great news for England.
After review, the attacker put his leg in front of the defender without any foul. So final decisions, no foul.
I thought that, yes, he may have I don't think he even altered his line. If he did, he did because he looked like he was trying to get behind the ball to actually get a shot off on goal. And by doing so, they claim that he stepped into the defender and not the other way around. Look, I think his foot was on the ground. He was in the position in front of the defender. The defender then clatters into him. So I think the referee gives the penalty. It should have stood. But that's the question, the interpretation. The interpretation and the reasoning for not allowing it was the referee saying that the defender, the attacker in Jed Spence, in this instance, stepped across into the defender, and that's why the foul occurred. I'm not sure. I've not seen that. We watched a game afterwards in Argentina and Switzerland, and it happened numerous times in the game where particularly actually Argentinian players stepped in front of Swiss players as they came in for a challenge, and every time were awarded a free kick. So I think that's where the problem is, the inconsistency with the decision-making, and that's where we're always going to get questions and where people are going to have debate about the ongoing decisions that are made by referees and officials.
A debate that's raging out of the Switzerland-Argentina game also centres around a VAR decision with Brill Mbolo earning a second yellow card for diving and getting sent off. I know some people were arguing this was an incorrect use of the video assistant referee. I got to say, though, I kind of always enjoy seeing diving punished, Mark.
My understanding is that actually it's 100% the correct decision. My understanding of the way that the rules have changed, and that if somebody's unfairly awarded a card, a yellow card, for an act that they didn't commit, and VAR is able to determine that's actually the case. Once the yellow card is issued, if it's unfairly given, meaning mistaken identity, so to speak, or misinterpreted of actually who committed the foul, the right decision is to overturn and actually, in fact, give it to the perpetrator. And in this instance, it was a clear dive. I mean, the guy's on the yellow card, he's dived. Paredes didn't foul him. One of the few times he probably didn't foul someone on the night. I mean, that was the surprise, because actually when it first happened in normal speed, watching on TV, I thought, yeah, it's a yellow card. Has to be.
After review, there is no foul for number 5. And number 7, there is a clear simulation. Final decision, yellow card for number 7.
He's going to be sent off here, Mbolo. It is a second yellow card.
And then obviously seeing it in the replay, I was like, oh my gosh, that is a clear dive. And I actually think it's the right decision. I don't have a problem with it. I feel for Switzerland. I feel for Brill Mbolo, because you could see he was devastated, and the realization sinking in that he's been sent off for diving, and he knows he's dived. There's no doubt about it at all.
I can't agree more strongly. It shaped what came. Argentina really took control from that moment. Ultimately, 3-1 victors. It was an extra time screamer from Julian Alvarez against the 10-man Swiss. That goal was a joy, Mark.
It was brilliant. I mean, unfortunately, the yellow card, the second yellow red card changed the game. There was a moment where Switzerland you felt like they're gaining momentum, getting that 1-1 back into the game. You felt like they're going to really build on something here. And then I think Switzerland did well to see the game out to the end of 90 minutes. And then the extra time, you just felt that unless they're able to just ride their luck, dig deep and somehow survive, you just felt that Argentina were going to run away with this. And obviously that's what happened in the end. I mean, Julian Alvarez goal was sensational.
Lautaro Martinez. Julian Alvarez! Wow!
I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. The minute left the foot, you felt this is going top corner. And it did. So it was a brilliant goal to put, basically give Argentina the initiative, get their heads in front. And then from that point onwards, it was always going to be a struggle for Switzerland. We've been down to 10 men, trying to push numbers forward, then going to get completely caught out at the back. And then there's no surprise that obviously Argentina then finish him off with Martinez finishing, making it 3-1. It was, again, not the best football being played, but I think we've seen that time and time again at World Cups where these games, there's so much riding on it. There's so much at stake. And it's about just getting through each round. And Argentina at the moment just keep doing what they have to do to get past the next opposition. But they got a very different challenge when they come up against England in the semi-final.
Lionel Messi laid on the first goal for Alexis McAllister. He was otherwise somewhat quiet in regular time before looking more menacing as extra time wore on.
Messi's corner. What a header that is! Alexis McAllister with precision.
Do you get the sense, A, he has the petrol to keep it up at 39 years of age in the difficult conditions? I know that you were saying Atlanta, you would expect things to be a little bit easier, but still potentially two massive games to go for the 39-year-old.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt the games that he's been playing is taking it out of him. I mean, there's not a lot of recovery time between now and the semi-final, and then after that, the final. So there is still two massive games to be played. Even if they don't win the semi-final, there's the bronze playoff. So there's a lot still at stake. Obviously, for Argentina, it would be obviously devastating, as it would be for any team in the semi-final to miss out. But at 39, it's certainly difficult. Like I said, Atlanta, under roof, air-conditioned. We saw Argentina play Egypt in that game, and I actually felt, because Argentina played Cabo Verde the game before in the round of 32, and they just got past Cabo Verde and here in Miami, and I thought, right, going to Atlanta, they're going to be a different team. This is going to really suit Argentina to play really well. And they struggled. They struggled against an Egypt side who played really, really well for, what, 79 minutes, 78 minutes. And that surprised me. So maybe, you know, look, maybe it's going to be another challenge for them, you know, to play in those conditions, backing up after another big game, another, you know, extra time adventure. So, you know, even though England have had the extra time as well in very, very tough conditions, I think it's going to be a really tough game again for both sides.
So the final four is the literal top four in the FIFA rankings coming into this World Cup. Gianni Infantino would be a happy man right now. Who is going to be in the final, Mark?
Oh, gosh, it's such a difficult one to call. I'll stick by what I said before the tournament. I believe that France are the ones that are going to win the World Cup. I think they're the best team that I've seen at this World Cup. And every obstacle that was thrown in front of them, they've either, you know, the Paraguay was probably their biggest challenge in so many ways in terms of the way they play, the way they had to play football there, the way they had to adapt and then deal with the, you know, the tactics that Paraguay threw at them. And they came through that one. And I think that was their biggest hurdle and their biggest obstacle in the path. The way they disposed of Morocco, a side that was fancied by a lot of people to do well at this World Cup, which they did do well, but thought maybe they could go a bit further. France, you know, didn't get knocked out of their stride. They dominated from start to finish. But Spain's a very good side, you know, well-organized, some really good players. They're difficult to break down, obviously don't concede many goals. But I just feel that France will have too much. Defensively, they're pretty solid, France, but they've also got so much more going forward than Spain. So I'm going to say France is in the final, and you know what? I really do fancy England. I do. I know there's so much at stake. There's so much rivalry between Argentina and England. It's a semi-final. I just think that Thomas Tuchel's got something extra with his squad in the squad he's picked, the togetherness of them, and they're a different side. They're a team now that don't look like a pushover. They're a side that just find ways to win. I mean, one could argue the same thing about Argentina, which is very, very valid to say that as well. And of course, you know, I'm going against Lionel Messi, one of the greatest players of all time. However, I'm still going to stick with my choice. I'm going to say it's a France-England final.
It would be a belter. Hey, just one last one on the crowds. You've covered the Argentinians. You've covered England today. How's that crowd going to look in Atlanta, and like, how fizzy is that going to be? Which side's going to be better supported?
Well, it's going to be wild. I mean, I don't know how people are going to get tickets. Honestly, I don't know how they're going to work that one out. I mean, Argentina, every game I've done with Argentina, they have just completely, like, probably 85 to 90% of people in the stadium have been Argentinian supporters whenever Argentina has played. I don't know if that's going to be the case in this next round at Atlanta. Look, English fans are renowned for finding tickets, getting their ways into games and being there as well. They're normally in their droves as well. So I like to think there's going to be a good mix. I hope there is. I'm sure England fans will be there in their you know, numbers, massive amounts, as will the Argentinian fans. So it's going to be a very, very loud and I think emotional crowd and an emotional event as well. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm loving the semi-finals. I'm loving this World Cup. It's been brilliant. Of course, there's football that at times probably hasn't been at the best at what we've seen the levels in 2022. However, I think the varieties of conditions have played their part. But overall, I think the tournament is as exciting as ever.
Argentina, England, they've got history. France, Spain, they've got history. Someone's going to make history. Mark Schwartz is going to join us after the Argentina-England game to break that down and cast ahead towards the final. Can't wait to unpack it all with you later in the week, Mark.
Cheers, looking forward to it.
Thanks to SBS, ITV and Fox Sports for the extra audio used in this episode.